Hi, Sue Hall here. Welcome to the sixth podcast in our fourth series of Talking the Dis Out of Dyslexia, hosted by the whole Dyslexic Society. On March 27th, 2021, TEDx Bear Creek Park live streamed 12 talks, and I was privileged to be one of the speakers. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce Sandy Gerber, whose talk was entitled The Secret to Romantic Relationships, the theme of which was to label with care. Sandy is a passionate powerhouse, a multiple award-winning communication marketing strategist, author, and founder of three successful companies. So welcome, Sandy.
Thank you.
So where do we start? How did Sandy get to be Sandy? Where did you start?
That's a big question. How did I start? You know, how did I get to the TED stage? You know, for the last 25 years, I've been focused on marketing and communications and working with companies across Canada and North America to really differentiate them and, bottom line, make their messages land with people, right? So that we actually feel an emotional connection to brands in the world. So that's been my passion. I mean, I was the kid, Sue, when I was younger, that people came to and said, "Hey, Sandy, what do I say to get my parents to say yes?" I mean, this started on the playground.
It did, didn't it? Yeah. Perfect.
I was always fascinated by words, really words, right? The words we use to motivate people, to take action, to listen, and to be heard since I was a kid. And then it didn't hurt that my mother was a psychologist as well. And so she had all these books lying around on body language and, you know, nonverbal and verbal and the psychology of communication. And in my teens, I remember sneaking into a room, grabbing a body language book and studying it, and then being able to say, "Oh, wow, look at what is happening in high school. And I can read people's body language." I was fascinated by that.
Totally. I think people are fascinating, period, right?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. And so I was doing this marketing, I was doing communications, you know, had worked for big companies and all really exciting stuff. And then I had this kind of moment in my life, and I call it the Rachel moment. And I was flying around the world trying to put e-gaming in Canada for BC Lottery. And, you know, it was very impressive on paper. And when you talk about it, I was flying to Hong Kong and I was going to Denmark and Iceland and Kelowna and Kamloops, you know, and that's still impressive too. I had done, you know, a day of full traveling as a marketing executive. And I arrived at my family's cottage in Ontario, and my sister is sitting there and we're on the dock, and I was kind of having that Corona moment with a beer and my little children playing nearby in the beach. And all of a sudden I heard my son scream, and I hadn't seen my kids for a couple of days because I've been doing all this business traveling, and the nanny had been looking after them. And this was my life at the time. That was important to me. And I heard my son scream. I dropped everything. I ran over to my son and I said, "Jackie, it's okay. Mommy's here." And he looked up at me and he said, "No, Rachel." And Rachel is my nanny. And everyone I tell that story to feels it in their heart. Oh, it was devastating because I thought, wait a minute, everything's out of sync here. You know, this was a reset on my life, you know, and it was really important. My mom raised me to be a strong woman and an entrepreneur, but at the same time, family was our number one value. And so I now had failed both, in my opinion. It was funny because at that point I was like, okay, that's it. I'm all in on things. So I was like, I'm just going to be a stay-at-home mom. I'm going to drop everything. And this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to commit to my children 100%. And everyone around me and my husband at the time laughed very hard because, you know, I'm the woman that on mat leave, I had my soup cans alphabetized, right? Like I was so bored with this stuff. I move at such a big pace. So I had to find a balance between being there for my children so that when they are hurt and harmed and need their mom, they reach for their mom. And you know, emotionally, how much that mattered to me. And then the second side was also be able to make an impact in the world and impact people through my work. And maybe I could look at my life a little differently. So that's when everything changed. What I did is I told the company, okay, I'm leaving. I'm going to have my own business. I'm going to put it in my bedroom. I had the kids draw an in and out sign. We put it on my door and mommy was open for business. Oh. And that way I had the time and the clients and the work around my schedule, right? Yes. And what was going to work for me and my kids first. Yeah. And so I did that. Now the marriage dissolved for a number of reasons, but the kids were still young and I now found myself as a woman with her own business, two children, single mom.
It doesn't get more scary than that.
It was really scary. It was one of the scariest times. I mean, besides the Rachel moment, it was a scary time because I had no support. My family's back east and I was just doing this on my own. So a long story short, what happened is I started looking for resources. I knew marketing, I knew communications. Business development is a little different for sure, but it requires those pieces. And so I started sleuthing online, looking for any tool I could use to help me with my sales. And I came across this one book that really changed my life. And this is what drove the trajectory that landed on the TED stage. I was looking online and I was trying to find sales techniques because good ones don't grow old. And I found this book called The Magic Power of Emotional Appeal. And it's by Roy Garn. And now it was a book in the 60s, cheesy title, cheesy graphics on it and stuff. But you know what? Good information, as I said, doesn't grow old. So I devoured this book and I realized, well, there's some stuff in there that I could apply to my sales techniques. And more importantly, to understand what motivates people to listen and to act. And I had never come across anything like that. And it ignited me. I suddenly realized that if I adapted some of this philosophy, I could actually use this in my personal relationship as well with my ex-husband. I started seeing significant growth in my business. I applied this psychology, kind of emotional appeal messaging with my clients and my business. And then I started applying it with my team. I started understanding what motivates them. And it really comes down to, since then, for 10 years, I've been evolving this methodology.
Wow.
And so the TEDx talk that I gave was just one tiny segment of that. And it's around labeling, really shining the light on how negative labeling can impact our life.
Definitely. That's quite the story. And the labeling is where you and I coincide, because I'm working with people who are labeled. And the sad part for me, which isn't quite the same as you, but the sad part is they start to live their label. If you're aware of that label, you start to think, well, that's because I'm disabled.
What I found with labeling is that we essentially have four. We have four labels in our life, and one of them is our predominant label, and it's developed by our environment, our life experiences, and what we've been subjected to and overcome. And so if we really examine that, if we look at, there's four things. It spells SAVE, the acronym SAVE: safety, achievement, value, and experience. Those are the four labels. And if we understand the people in our lives, which one of those drives their decisions, that becomes their label. So I'll give you an example. Safety is my husband's label, and mine is experience.
Okay.
And I talk about this in my TED talk, right? That this incident in the kitchen, safety is very important to him. So if I recognize that he's motivated by safety, anything he says to me, his behaviors are going to make more sense to me. And what's most important, I'm going to have empathy for him, because that's what matters to him. Unfortunately, our labels have been given to us by other people. And we haven't owned our own label. Why don't we label ourselves? Like you say, learning ABLE, right? Why don't we label ourselves?
Very good point. Love it. So yours is experience.
Yes. So his is safety. So, you know, we go into the kitchen, we're making dinner, and I'll go and grab the knife, and he'll turn around and say, "Be careful, it's really sharp." And I'll give him a terrible looking face because I'm wondering, what? I'm an adult. I know it's sharp. And I'll face these things in my head, probably not vocalize them. And what happens is I need to reset in that moment and say, of course he's worried about my safety, because that's what's important to him.
That's who he is.
So our labels really affect that. And it's the same thing with me, with experience. You know, Friday night, I come home, he's motivated by safety and value. He just wants to kick off his shoes, sit on the couch, chill in his own home. And I'm experienced. I'm like, I want to go down the block. I want to experience the new restaurant. I want to have a new experience, right? Yeah. We have to be aware of each other's labels. And that way, then we communicate more effectively.
So if your label is safety, does that mean that you operate from fear a lot of the time?
It typically means that you're concerned about preservation of yourself and your family, your tribe.
Yeah,
in a good way. And you also like structure, you like plans, you like boundaries. You know, these are the people that are staying in jobs for a long period of time because there's security in it. Health is really important to people who are motivated by safety.
And the achievement one, that would be like the people pleasers, the ones who feed off acknowledgement.
I think there's a part of that. I mean, all of us are driven by a degree of recognition. It's impressed that what we do matters to others. But people who are driven by achievement are typically driven because they are goal setters, right? Yeah. So they want to achieve something. They want to test their limits. They want to be innovators, and they also want to appear as if they've achieved things. So, you know, their personal possessions, their appearance and stuff, very important to these people that are motivated by achievement.
Cool. I'm going to go through the list now. Sorry.
Sure.
Value.
So value, these are the people that are motivated by not only getting good return on their investment, saving, adding, growing money, but also their time. Their time is critical. So they need to get value for what they do. So it's like someone invites you to an event and you're driven by value and you find it was a waste of your time. That's going to drive them nuts. Here's an example. My husband, driven by value as well. I said to him the other night, let's get Skip the Dishes. And he's like, okay, sure, let's do that. You pick something. So I'm scrolling through and I say, oh, Freshie would be great. And he says, no. I'm like, what? You don't like Freshie? I know he likes Freshie. So I'm like, what's going on? And he's like, they're a block and a half away. And I was like, yeah, but, and then I stopped myself and I'm like, of course he wouldn't want to do that. There's not enough distance to validate the
experience. Yes.
Because I understood that, I just went, of course, because that's his label, safety and value. But it helps you understand the people in your life better.
Totally. Does that stop you doing things that you know would annoy him?
Oh, yes. Yes, because it opens up a really transparent, honest, authentic conversation with the people in your life. Yeah. And, you know, I've even done this with people I work with to say, here are the four. Which one do you think you are? Because we can all really self-assess quite quickly. Yeah. And it just opens up better, more honest conversation.
Absolutely. This is fascinating.
Well, and I'll tell you the experience one too, Sue. That's me. And these are the people that are motivated emotionally by change, creativity. They're curious. They can't stand monotony. They like novelty. These are the people that are lining up for the new iPhone. They want to know what's possible, what's coming. And they're somewhat difficult to live with sometimes because they're like, why are you never happy? Well, because I'm always looking for a new experience. So because my partner knows that, it helps us, we compromise better.
Yes.
I know we need safety and value. He knows I'm driven by experience and achievement. Yeah. We now can. I do have a quiz on my site that is free for people. And you go in and you just answer 20 quick questions and it will spit out the percentage of which one of those is for you. We may even be different at work than we are at home, right? Yeah. Often we are, but you'll see which one comes to the top. And then there's a whole bunch of info that comes with it so that you can understand, oh, here's some of the things that are great about it.
For the listeners, this would be www.sandygerber.com. What did you take away from your TED experience?
Oh, it was such an interesting experience. You know, because I'm driven by experience, I do often tend to set these goals that kind of freak me out, that make me a little nervous and scared, out of my comfort zone. I think that's how we accomplish the best things in life. And so TED was definitely one of those for me. I'm sure it was for you too. And so I think what I got out of TED, I didn't do TED to make money, to sell things. I know that this impacted my life and I want it to help others. I think the thing that's most exciting is seeing the response to it. And I delivered the talk in a fun and engaging way, really kind of being authentic to who I am and ignited about this content. And I think the most amazing thing is the feedback I'm getting that this is actually shifting people 10 minutes. And this knowledge makes them think about labeling with care in all their relationship. And for that, I'm really excited.
It was something that I hadn't really thought of. I mean, I probably was doing it all the time, but I hadn't really been cognitive of doing it. And it does make such a difference. Wonderful. So it's been fun talking to some of the other speakers, and they all found the actual setting a little terrifying because we didn't have the audience. Would you have preferred an audience?
Yeah, I found it difficult because there's parts in my talk that I actually really need that energy from the audience to help me get even more ignited about the talks. A part of experience is the drive for impact. And so I found it difficult not being able to have that immediate impact. You know, like right after that, we all got together and I was quite emotional, right? And I was emotional, not only because the journey had come to an end and it'd been a long journey, but because I didn't actually have a sense of, did it land? Like, did it actually land with people? And so that churned up all these emotions. And then also when you put yourself out there like that, it's terrifying. Like, very.
I had one session with Tanya, who was our head coach, and she was saying to me, come on, you've got to loosen up. And I said, but Tanya, I'm British. I don't do that. And so she said, what are you afraid of? And I said, but I just don't want to make a complete fool of myself. She said, I absolutely promise you, I will not let you make a fool of yourself.
Oh, Sue, you're just wonderful.
And once she said that, then I was fine. Do you know what I mean? Because she was very easy to trust. And I think you've worked with her quite a bit.
Oh, yes. Yes. I've been working with her for some time now. And I just love her. She's amazing. And she's just so talented in helping you get where you need to go. And to honing in on the message, she was a big part of helping me hone in. Like, I just went through the four emotional appeals with you. That's a lot of content. We had to hone it down to something that was bite-sized. Helping me get that message down to Label with Care was really a big part of Tanya's role.
Now, in the good old days, for your normal work, you would be talking to people, keynote speaking, running workshops, webinars, and you're having to do this online now? So.
Yeah, this is just a passion project of mine. I don't do this 9 to 5. So that's what people really are surprised by when they see this. So during the day, I'm actually a marketing executive for one of Canada's fastest growing agriculture technology companies. Oh. So indoor growing, vertical farming. That's going to have a huge impact on the world.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure, happy to. Yeah. The company is called Cubic Farms Systems Corp. And they are located in Langley. And they have offices in Canada and in the US. We have multiple technologies. But what's really amazing about this company, I had my own marketing agency. I was doing consulting and communications. And they approached me. And I couldn't say no to this opportunity because it will truly change the world and how we eat. And it's so needed, right? So being driven by experience and wanting to have an impact in the world, it just was a total major fit. So Cubic Farms is exciting and different because they help farmers. They're a technology company that's founded by farmers. So they help farmers to grow commercial scale size indoor growing produce, fresh greens and microgreens and herbs and so forth. And then we also have another technology that helps farmers and ranchers to grow livestock feed indoors. So actually replacing acreage outside and growing it inside at commercial scale. It's so revolutionary what this company's doing, and I'm just honored to be a part of it.
I've got this vision, this great big sort of tower building, and there's crops and plants in this big tower building.
Well, the difference actually is it's funny because when you think vertical farming, that's what people think. They think this big rack and stack kind of warehouse thing. What Cubic Farms does differently and efficiently, and why the name is called Cubic, is actually they're housed in these modules and there's hundreds of trays in there and they're automated. So they don't take up the huge space, the physical footprint that these big warehouses do. They actually take up less because they're automated. They go through a system. So it's like maximizing the cubic space. It's less labor, less water, less energy, less everything, rather than these big, huge warehouses that are coming up. Yeah, it's super efficient and it's just so exciting.
It's very exciting. Could they do like a home-sized cubic? We could have all our vegetables in our home.
There are a lot of like smaller companies that are doing hobby farms and things like that, but that's different from what we're doing. We're looking at partnering with grocery retails and food distributors and people like that to provide, you know, instead of taking all this produce from California, shortening the supply chain, putting these cubic-minded spaces of indoor growing closer to these places so we can actually have communities with local food.
That is an amazing idea and so valuable on so many levels. That's exciting, Sandra.
Yeah.
Very exciting. So you do that during the day.
I work with Cubic during the days, and then in the evenings and the weekends and stuff, I'll work on the TED Talk, and I have a book coming out in the spring.
Ooh, tell us about the book.
The working title is Emotional Magnetism, because it's about the four emotional appeals that I went through with you and how to save your relationships by understanding those labels. That comes out in the spring, and I'm thrilled with the manuscript and where it is right now. I've taken the 10 years of work that I've done and studied and put it into this book in a really nice, playful, my delivery, right? An engaging, fun, story-filled book. So it will be purposeful and helpful and kind of in the genre of self-development and helping people communicate better.
We will look out for emotional magnetism in the
spring 2022.
Wonderful. For the children that I'm working with, motivation is quite tricky. The work that I do, it gives them the tools and it gives them exercises to be who they are and learn the way they were born to learn. And the only motivation that we're able to share with them is that their success will motivate them. And sometimes that's not always enough. So we can't motivate anyone, but how can we help people to motivate themselves?
It's a great question. I think what we need to do is understand what's driving their decisions, right? In all aspects of their life. So what I found is once you figure out if you are safety, achievement, value, or experience, it puts everything in perspective. It makes sense why you chose what you chose. like in all areas, not just, you know, maybe the job you have. Here's an example. My son is driven by value. It's important to him what profession he has to have in mind right now. What will his profession pay? And at 19 years old, he's trying to figure out which route he goes based on the income and compensation he'll have. Now, knowing that value is important to him, it's not bad that he's driven by that because that's what he needs. And so I understand that. What happens here is we understand better what's really driving the people around us and what they need. Yeah. No matter who they are, what challenges they have, if you have the conversation with them and say, what is your emotional appeal? What is driving you? Which one's resonating with you the most? You'll start seeing that it's showing up in all their choices, well, who they hang out with, what hobbies they take, how they have their home. Here's an example. I'm driven by experience. I have to change the furniture around off, right? Because I like a new experience. So it actually puts things in perspective for people. It's not about motivating people. It's about helping them to understand what's motivating them.
Exactly. We can provide tools sometimes and help them understand themselves, right? But they're the ones with the push.
It's about self-awareness. We need to understand this. And I mean, this should be taught in school. This should be, it helps you to clarify why you're making the choices that you do. And it changes over time. I mean, I unfortunately, a few years ago, lost both my parents. And before I lost them, I was driven by achievement and experience. And when I lost them, all of a sudden that shifted. Safety became very important to me, making sure that my kids were cared for properly if anything happened to me, and just really being mindful about having things in place for security and stability. Life events change us so much, but recognizing that our emotional needs change as well with those, it helps us communicate better in our relationships.
You're so right. This should be in high schools, honestly.
Yeah.
It's such a valuable lesson. If I'd known what I know now in high school, I could have aced it.
Well, that's right. You know, and we already have enough stress in high school with labeling and acceptance and just fitting in, right? Awesome. So if this was more open to people to be aware of why they're them, right? Why are we each unique and what drives us is unique and who we are is unique. And being okay and accepting of that, we will have way more empathy in the world, right? We'll have way more connection in the world. And that's why I do what I do. This is why this drives me. It helped me in my own life after two failed marriages and that incident with Rachel moment. It helped me to have a really remarkable relationship now because we have this transparency between one another. We understand what each other needs. And that's not just in my own romantic relationship. That's peripheral. It goes to all my relationships, my team that I work with, the customers that work with us, all family, friends, acquaintances, yourselves. It can broaden those relationships so much.
I love the fact that everything that we do in our lives can seem to be totally unrelated and it all comes together doing the thing that we're meant to be doing with our life.
Right. The book that I had discovered, it had different terminology and that it was kind of complicated to understand. So I simplified it and made it work for me. And then when I started sharing that with people, it started working for them. What I loved about it is it just put everything in perspective for me. All of a sudden I was like, now I know why these things have happened in the past or my patterns or my choices, because I didn't know it was driving those. We don't until we have this knowledge. And so I know even with the label with care piece, being aware of the thoughts that we have in our heads for the people that we love in our life and how that impacts and changes over time in a relationship. That's the biggest shift from that talk, right? Is wow, my adorables have turned into annoyables. And I don't know when that happened. And it doesn't happen overnight. It happens over time. Someone leaves their socks on the floor and you're like, oh, and then they do it again. And you're like, you're lazy. And now these labels start coming and they're in your head and you're not vocalizing them. It makes it really hard to want to cuddle, right?
And then you start looking for them.
Yes.
You're expecting it.
Yeah, then you become a detective and you're starting to collect that evidence. You did it again. You're lazy again. And you start building it and you've got this whole thesis in your head about this partner of yours who's lazy. But really, what did they do? They left a sock on the floor. If you are aware of maybe they're busy, driven by achievement, and that's not something that matters to them, it will help you figure out, look, I know that this seems small to you, but for me, who's driven by safety or tidiness, this is important to me. So could you kindly pick up your sock? That's what this is all about. It's all about opening up our communication so we connect better.
And don't you just love those ahas? Said to one of the other speakers, there's nobody more fascinating to me than me, and nobody more fascinating to you than you.
Right.
Just figuring out why we do these things.
That's right.
Sandy, what are you going to leave us with? What was your message to the world?
First of all, thank you so much for having me on here. It's just a delight. And I think what you're doing is just so important. You're helping people to understand dyslexia. You're helping them to understand. I liked your last series, how it was like, this is a gift, being learning able. So I love what you're doing, Sue. Thank you. My final message on this would just be, let's be kinder to one another. Let's understand what's motivating us emotionally. Put a label on that. Pick one of those four and then go tell the people in your life. Go share that with them. Ask them what's their label and start having this conversation that gets you shifting. Because the next time you have a negative thought about the person in your life, whether it's your partner, your boss, your spouse, whomever, your friend, family, whatever, the next time that negative thought comes up, ask yourself, has that shifted from what it was before? And what changed? And I'll bet you, it's just your thoughts. It wasn't the behavior. So just be aware of that and really carefully label with care.
I'll beat that ending. Thank you. That is fantastic, Sandy. Thank you so much for joining.
My pleasure.
And please, anyone who'd like to get hold of Sandy, as I mentioned, her website is sandygerber.com. Sandy, SandyGerber.com. And thank you to everyone who's listening. Please subscribe, follow, share. And if you'd like to see what the whole Dyslexic Society is up to, go to www.thewds.org. And we'd love to hear from you at info@thewds.org. I hope you'll join us to hear some more speakers and more of the TEDx Bear Creek Park organizing and coaching team. So until next time, take care, stay well, and bye for now.